They've got a minute left.
This is a joint committee on Ways and Means, Subcommittee on Public Safety. It's June 12th, 2017, and I'm opening a public hearing on Senate Bill 689 relating to the Task Force on Reentry, Employment, and Housing.
And I would like to testify on that.
Are you going to testify on that? You want to go around there right now?
Do that.
Thank you.
Did he sign up this time?
I have the sign-up list, and I know that the other individual who was a part of this is Senator Dimbrough, so we'll hear from the two of them first.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, colleagues. I'm Michael Dimbrough, and I represent District 23, Northeast, Southeast Portland, in the Oregon Senate. I come before you with a bill that comes out of a task force that we had that started meeting a little over a year ago that was it was created in the 2015 legislature in connection with the work that we were doing on the Ban the Box legislation. And Senator Winters and I received the handoff from our House colleagues on that bill, and we're working on refining the Ban the Box bill and getting it to a form where it could pass, one of the things that was very clear to us was that there are many more obstacles out there related to successful reentry for people who are formerly incarcerated. And Senator Winters insisted that we create such a task force and then insisted that I chair it. So those of you who know Senator Winters will know this is business as usual. Anyway, we did. We had a great task force. Then Representative Frederick was part of it, as was Representative Parrish, and a number of people from different aspects of the community. And I'm happy to say that we worked hard. We learned a lot. It was very clear that the time had come for the legislature to have its own task force really addressing these issues. And we were able to recommend six or seven bills that are making their way through the legislative process as we speak. But it was also really clear to us that we were just scratching the surface of the problem. And a few of the issues that definitely remain out there were the need to really keep working on that very thorny and difficult issue of the fines and fees that people leave the legislature owing. Listen to me. Leave that other form of incarceration owing. It's a difficult issue because it involves multiple jurisdictions and multiple kinds of situations, but we need to keep working on that issue. Another is everything related to the particular needs, and there really are particular needs that women incarcerated women face as they are both inside and coming out of incarceration. And then finally, something that we were just kind of scratching the surface on was, we realized how important it was for the work of reentry to begin while individuals are inside the system through different training programs, treatment programs, placement programs, all sorts of things that are happening inside are going to influence the success when they come out. And that was another issue that we definitely needed to look at. So probably the first bill that we all, legislative proposal that we all agreed on was that the task force needs to be renewed for another couple of years so that we can reassemble the participants. One of the things we were fortunate in having was several formerly incarcerated people were attending our meetings and participated. It just so happened that a couple of people on the task force were themselves formerly incarcerated, but that was just by happenstance. And so in the version of the bill that's before you, we actually decided to call out having a couple of people from that community so that we would be sure to have them as part of the group. So with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions you might have about the experience of the task force or what we have in mind. But first, I encourage you to hear what will be rich testimony from my colleague.
Thanks. No pressure. Thanks very much. This particular task force, frankly, does exactly what we want it to do. We had an issue. We got together with the people who are directly involved. We had a bipartisan effort to try to understand what the issues were, what the concerns were. We came up with ideas and proposals. My name. I'm Senator Lou Frederick from District 22, North and Northeast Portland. Thank you. But we managed to actually come up with ideas that we were able to put forward as a full task force to try to really address some basic issues. And the basic issue is we want folks coming out of incarceration to succeed. And the question is, how do we help them succeed? Because we don't want them back there. We want them to contribute to the community and to the society, and we've got to figure out how to do that. Well, that came with about six or seven proposals that you have seen in front of you over time, but it also came with the recognition that there was a lot more that needed to be done and a lot more discussion that was needed as well. So I encourage you to support this particular task force and continuing it, as well as the proposals that we continue to bring forward to you. But for this particular bill, please support this task force. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you, Senators.
Thank you.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 689. I'll get to you later, Jen. But then I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 483, because the good senator is coming up. We'll need to get to another committee. So.
Good afternoon, Madam Co-Chair and committee members. Thank you very much. This is Floyd Przonski, State Senator for District 4, parts of Lane and Douglas counties. And thank you very much for taking up Senate Bill 483 today on your calendar and docket. 483 is the intent there is to create a new crime for unlawful use of a global positioning device known as a DPS. Device system. The reason this bill came to my attention was there's a young woman who lived in the Springfield area who was having some work done on her car, and as they whoever was doing the work on the car noticed that there was a little box that was attached to the vehicle, asked if she knew what that was. She said she did not, and it turned out that it was a DPS position finder, and she had no knowledge as to what it was and why it was there. Springfield Police Department got involved, and they determined that it was placed there by a farmer person that had a relationship with the woman, who I believe at that time, I believe he had a no-contact order in against him as it pertained to her. When I saw the article, I said, that's strange. I thought we already had covered this, and so we start looking at the statutes and realize that we didn't have any prohibition from someone just sticking a DPS type of a system, GPS, I should say, not DPS. I would think Department of Public Safety. The GPS system onto the vehicle. And so this is what we've brought forward. It will, in fact, establish a crime as a Class A misdemeanor for someone that does it without any other prohibitions. It raises it to a Class C felony if a person has, in fact, been convicted of stalking or violating the court stalking order, has committed a similar offense that from another jurisdiction, or has been subject to a citation of having no contact with that person. I believe that this is an important bill that will, in fact, give individuals more I say comfort in the sense of that someone can be held accountable if they do, in fact, put a GPS system on to their vehicle without having giving consent. The one thing I think is important to put on the record here as well is that the motor vehicle freight carriers, motor carriers, do in fact use GPS for tracking their vehicles and stuff, and so we do in fact have an exception that they can in fact place that on their vehicles and not be in violation. And of course, for law enforcement use, they also can do so when they have a court order or a warrant to allow that to occur. That's what we have.
Thank you. Questions?
Is an important bill?
Yes, Senator Fredericks.
Thank you. I am curious about, you mentioned the motor carrier situation. We have in Portland a whole slew of orange bikes. I don't know if you've seen that or not.
I know of them.
I'm not sure whether they have a GPS system attached to the bikes just to keep track of where they are. Is this part of that? I mean,
excuse me. Chair, or I should say co-chair Winters, co-chair Stark, Senator Frederick, because the owners of the bikes are the ones that would be putting the GPSs on the bikes, they would be covered. I'm assuming this would, if it's part of the City of Portland's bike program or whoever is running the program and has the control over those bikes, they would be able to do that because they are the owners putting them on the bikes for those purposes.
So just checking.
And same thing with any other type of, you know, there are like they may already be covered on the motor carriers, but there are a lot of different other companies that will, in fact, place GPSs on their vehicles that employees are using, so they are able to track and know where that vehicle is or where it's going.
Thank you.
Senator Steiner-Haber.
Actually, this does beg an interesting question. As a parent of teenagers, we installed a device on our daughter's car that's a GPS tracker, right? And for a while, we chose not to inform our daughters about it, just because we wanted them to have the freedom. But we own the car; it's our name on the title. They're the ones who are using it. Would this prohibit parents from doing that?
It would not.
Okay.
Based on if you look under Section 1, Sub 1, a person commits the crime. If the person knowingly affixes the GPS device to the motor vehicle without the consent of the owner of the motor vehicle.
Cool. Not the operator, but the owner.
That's correct.
Cool.
Got it.
So,
yeah.
So
parents everywhere, thank you.
So in other words, if it's my car and Senator Fredericks is stalking me and he puts it under my car, he's guilty.
If a jury or the trier of facts finds him guilty, he will be guilty.
Notice she was speaking in a fictional manner here.
Yeah, and in the same situation like on rental cars. I mean, a lot of rental car companies do, in fact, put GPSs on. Many of you know when you enter into those type of contracts, there are certain places, such as if you're in states bordering Mexico, they have prohibitions of taking vehicles into Mexico. And so clearly they would still be able to do that and know that someone is in violation of their rental agreement.
Co-Chair Stark.
Thank you, Co-Chair Winters. I'm probably just nitpicking too much on the word affixes. I'm thinking now of our cell phone driving bill and how there was dialogue around, you know, you can't have your cell phone in your hand, but if you have it, you know, a magnet to something, it is now connected to the vehicle. Is there a loophole, you know, if you look up affixes, you're formally attaching versus just kind of dropping something in the trunk or drop, like, is, do you see any sort of technical loophole on that as opposed to if you drop, put, connect? I mean, and I'm also used to my little children, you know, don't hit, punch, kick. They have to, like, define everything. thoughts?
Yeah. So, Co-Chair Stark, the affixing comes into the units that I'm familiar with are ones that are actually affixed to a vehicle before it doesn't run around or in the sense of shift or move around when the car is being turned. I would say at this point I believe the word and the term and how it's being used, affix, is clear enough. Clearly, if we find out that for some reason someone has been able to reach some type of loophole, which I don't think they'll be able to, we could come back and, let's say, wordsmith or modify that term of art to ensure that it's covered. But these items, and I think Representative Barker would be able to give you a lot more detail as to his background, as to these are stuff that is, in fact, magnetized, that actually, I mean, they're secure to the bottom base underneath the vehicle in most cases. Clearly, like a rental car company could already be affixing them some other way to their vehicle than what normally how they're affixed. I think we're okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you very much.
I'm going to close the. Before I close, is there anybody else who'd like to comment? I'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 483 and reopen the public hearing on Senate Bill 689. Charles Neal and Commissioner Carlson. Jules. I'm sorry, I pronounced that wrong, too.
That's okay. Co-chairs Winter and Stark and members of the committee, my name is Truls Neal. I'm the deputy director for Multnomah County Department of Community Justice. I'm also a member of the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors and representing them as well. I was also a member of the task force that's in question, and I'm here to testify in support of it. I want to say that we do a lot of what we call evidence-based practices, looking at the best practices that are out there and according to research and how to handle people coming out of prison and jail to ensure that they don't return back into a life of crime or be reconvicted. Where I see this task force really being vital is connecting to the law and to these bills that can change policy. There, recently we had someone come and speak from Brooklyn, a Judge Block, to talk about collateral consequences. There are a lot of collateral consequences that folks coming out of prison and jail are exposed to that prevent them from being successful or inhibit them from being successful. I'll give you a small one. It's a one that just sticks in my craw. I heard you talking about hair, so I'll go there. It was, and it has to do with getting a barber's license to cut hair. You can't get a barber's license to cut hair if you've had a felony. And I'm not quite sure. There must be some reason behind it, but this is the kind of thing the task force looks at. What are these types of things that are in place that inhibit the success of folks who really want to make their lives better? So I have benefited from being on the committee. As I think Senator Dimbro and Frederick mentioned, we had a couple of folks who were former inmates and former consumers of correctional services. And hearing their perspective was vital to me and to the other folks associated with the Oregon Association of Community Corrections Directors. So I would ask that you fully support this bill.
Thank you, Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark. My name is Janet Carlson. I'm a Marion County Commissioner, and I'm here in support of Senate Bill 689A. I have served on a lot of task forces as a county commissioner, both at the state level and at a regional and a local level. And I was actually appointed to this task force to represent the counties through the Association of Oregon Counties. And I must say that this was really a very unique experience to be on this task force. A couple of things that crossed my mind about why was this a different experience? First of all, this task force, there was no preconceived agenda when we went on there. Sometimes you go into a task force and, you know, you kind of feel like you're set up in a way that kind of the staff knows where they want to go, and then you're there to kind of rubber stamp what that is. That was not the case in this task force at all. And in fact, a little bit ago, right before this meeting, Senate Bill 682A actually passed on the House floor. This was a bill that about child support for incarcerated obligors, and it was one that came out of some discussion from Marion County, and I brought forward the concept to the group, and we had some discussion, and Senator Dimbro graciously agreed to submit the bill on my behalf, and Representative Sanchez actually carried the bill on the House floor today, and it passed, and that wouldn't have happened if we hadn't had this task force and that kind of discussion, and I don't think it was really on the radar screen of anyone to talk about child support when the bill was put together during the last session, last long session. The second thing is that we had sort of your usual suspects of state agency folks and some local government folks, but we also had some really remarkable people that served on the task force that knew a lot about the topic. So, for example, we had a person that really understood about apprenticeships and the trades and could answer a lot of questions about that. We had a couple different people that run nonprofits or that work at nonprofits that serve this population, and they had a very interesting perspective. And we had a person with community colleges that could talk about those community college programs. So it was like if there was a question, there were people around the table that actually worked in that area and knew the answers, or if we didn't have that, we could get that information. So as you've heard, there's still work to do. I submitted a letter with my testimony that you have in your record. I think that what we did this round is we really identified a lot of issues, and we put bills together on what I'd call the low-hanging fruit, and now there are some really many more complex issues that we weren't able to tackle in the time that we had, particularly on the housing area and the employment area. I think that not a lot of our bills actually dealt with those two areas, and yet that's in the title of our task force, and I know at least in Marion County those are two very significant needs for people who are coming out of prison or now with justice reinvestment are being diverted from prison and being served at the local level. So I would urge your support for this bill. Thank you.
Questions? Yes, Senator Steinhardt.
It's interesting that you brought up the barber license because we had the privilege of visiting McLaren earlier this year, and one of the very impressive young men that we met there, who's really worked very, very hard to be an active participant in his own rehabilitation, has not only a barber's license but a barber instructor license.
Wow.
Now. And I don't know quite how he got that, if a felony, because clearly he's got a felony conviction if he's there. So I don't know how that jives, but you're absolutely right. I mean, we've had this conversation. Senator Winters and I had the opportunity to attend a conference, 5 years ago now, 2012, the Working Families Conference, and talked about some of these very issues about relooking at our licensure and our job applications, about understanding which felonies should be exclusionary for certain kinds of licenses and which ones are not really relevant or especially after a certain period of time. And it came up again when we were talking about certified drug and alcohol counselors, because many of them made unfortunate choices when they were in the throes of their addiction but have been making really important progress. So it's a great point to add.
Okay.
I've tried to look online, and I don't see that that's prohibited in Oregon. Maybe I'm just missing it. Judge
got it wrong.
Well, I know some of the other states do. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Oregon, but I just can't
check
find
that
it right now.
Well, you know, it's Senator Dimbrough mentioned the start of this when I was asked by the Senate President to navigate getting Ban the Box through. It was, and I said I would, but only with the understanding that we actually take that next step. And that next step was to create a work group to begin identifying some of the real problems and those real barriers to individuals reentering back into the community. And so it's worthwhile over time. We've actually, on the one hand, we love to say that, you know, once he or she has paid their debt and have done what we've asked them to do, and now they can go back into the community. And yet we have, through public policy and other things, have put so many actually barriers in the way of making it very hard for them to go back and to live a very fruitful life and to be where they become taxpayers and are able to take care of their families. So it is worthwhile work. And so, and of course, I always smile when I see the good commissioner, because she and I go back an awfully long way. Glad I had a hand in helping her become a legislator, and
absolutely.
And now she's county commissioner, and I, every time I think about it, I just think I was going through some old history the other day at home and thought about how helpful she was to me when we passed the Oregon Children's Plan. Never will forget it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any further questions? Oh, with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 689. And while we're waiting for John to come, here he is, I'm opening up a public hearing and work session on House Bill 2721.
Chair Winters, members of the committee, House Bill 2721 expands the crime of assault in the third degree to include physical injury to flaggers and highway workers performing official duties. The measure was originally heard in the House Judiciary Committee on March 7th and April 6th. As far as the fiscal impact statement goes, the Criminal Justice Commission projects 5 additional convictions for assault 3 per year. Using the conviction rates for assault 3 in the past couple of years, that means about 1 to 2 inmates to the DOC population per year. We've issued a fiscal impact statement. This would largely be considered a minimal impact statement. However, House Bill 3194 from 2013 requires us to do a 10-year estimate. So you see a written out statement that provides the full 10 years. The measure also includes a task force on road worker safety. We do have a proposed Dash 1 amendment, which would eliminate the task force and then leave the bill just with the expansion of the crime of assault in the third degree.
So I have Mike Scott and Chris Carpenter signed up for to testify on the bill. If you come up, because I don't see Representative McClain.
I'm Representative McClain's staff. She's not able to make
it. Oh, she's not? So, okay. So we'll take you up, and then if you will, I'm going to change the order. Can you wait?
Yeah.
Okay.
Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, for the record, my name is Chris Carpenter. I'm with the Oregon and Southern Idaho District Council of Laborers. I'm here to urge your strong support for House Bill 2721. Our district council represents about 3,500 members of the construction industry, including almost 200 flaggers. That number's going up with some new apprentices coming in, but almost 200 flaggers, as well as folks who work on asphalt and road and bridge repair. The work that these folks do is already dangerous, and they're out there all over the state every day working to help improve our roads and bridges, regardless of the weather. Currently, we are at a place where if one of these individuals is assaulted by somebody in their car, they do receive these increased protections, and there's the increased penalties for the assailant. We are just hoping that this bill will close the loophole of if that assailant exits their car and chooses to assault one of our workers. We think that this is a good opportunity to help prevent those kind of attacks. Finally, looking at the possibility of the transportation package going through this year and the projects that are proposed there, that's going to be a lot more workers on the road. We believe that the task force would be a very important thing, especially with these increased numbers. That said, getting some of these protections in for our workers is paramount to us. So we support the bill with the amendments, but would like to see the task force if possible. Thank you.
Thank you. You can.
Okay. Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, members of the committee. My name is Mike Scott, and I've been with the Oregon Department of Transportation for 22 years. I work highway maintenance out of Grants Pass in Southern Oregon. I also serve as statewide president of Local 730, and I represent approximately 1,900 ODOT workers from motor carrier to central services to highway maintenance. And I am here today to testify in support of House Bill 2721. First, I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Then I want to thank the sponsors of this bill for the opportunity to talk about this important issue. In a moment, well, I was hoping that we would have James Miley, who's a colleague of mine, who was going to be here to testify, but he can't be here. And I'd like to talk a little bit about his story at the end of this, if I may.
And we do have, for the record, and I don't know whether it's posted or not, we have a letter from Miley's wife, from Debbie, and also from James.
Okay.
So, go ahead.
Increasingly, it seems that ODOT workers are being faced with a more hostile and aggressive general public. Most of these incidences occur when we're holding traffic or we're working adjacent to private property. As for myself, I apply herbicide to the right-of-way. Over the years, I have been threatened with death, bodily harm, and I've had weapons drawn on me. Just as recent as last month, an ODOT crew was working a chip seal operation near Dufour on Highway 97. The threat against the employees was severe enough to warrant a menacing charge against the motorists by OSP who were called to the scene. I have details, more details of this incident to be attached to my testimony that we'll be getting to you. In my role as president of our local, I continue to hear from workers around the state about the increasingly confrontational behavior they encounter from the traveling public. Some of our workers are more skilled than others in de-escalating situations, and many times folks are able to walk away without the situation rising to the level of assault. But unfortunately, this is not always the case, as what happened to my colleague James Miley not too long ago this past year. House Bill 2721 would increase penalties for assault committed against a highway worker similar to that of an emergency medical provider, taxi driver, or public transit operator. House Bill 2721 also creates a task force on road worker safety. I feel this is an important component of the bill so we can figure out some of the preventive things that we can be doing to keep our workers safe before it escalates to assault. And I do understand that there is an amendment that is being proposed that would remove this task force. While I understand the goal of that, I still would proceed to see the bill pass as it was originally drafted. So I want to thank you again for the opportunity to testify.
Questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Is there any? Yes, I know Representative McLean's staff. Nicole.
Just to fill in today. Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark. For the record, my name is Nicole Stoner. I'm staff to State Representative Susan McLean. That's Forest Grove, Hillsborough, and Cornelius. I'm here today in place of Representative McLean to support House Bill 2721. This bill has two main components. First, it has an extension of protections that exist for workers currently. And the second is the task force that Chris and, Mike spoke about earlier. We understand that there is an amendment to remove the task force. In this difficult budget year, we respect the co-chair's efforts of cost containment to limit the use of task force. Representative McLean will support this bill without the amendment, and our office is committed to working on highway worker safety beyond this session. With the proposed amendment, the bill just has the one component. And highway workers currently enjoy an additional protection from assault if an individual hits them with their car. Intended or not, that crime has an elevated level that comes with an elevated punishment. And because we understand that these employees face additional dangers and we see that their work is valuable for the public's good and benefit. And the issue that you heard earlier, that there's an increase of people getting out of their car and actually physically assaulting these workers with their hands. Currently, that crime carries no additional punishment. It is at no elevated level. This bill simply extends that protection to if someone were to get out of this car. So with this bill, workers are protected whether the assailant is in their vehicle or outside of it. Highway workers have noticed an increase of these types of crimes. They've noticed people becoming more angry and aggressive towards them. And we see that the timing is right. We're working on a billions dollar transportation package. And with it addressing infrastructure now, it's time to address these workers' safety. I thank you for your time. I'm available to answer any questions should you have any.
Yes, Representative Barker.
Thank you. It's not actually a question, more of a comment. So these workers are they're not going down the bar looking for a fight. They're out on the road doing their job assigned. They can't run away. And when they're attacked like that, it's really a hazardous thing for everybody, all the rest of the people driving public, and especially those workers. And I think this is a good bill.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thank you. Yes, Reverend Huffman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd be happy to talk to Rep. McLean about it also. But it is possible to do an effective task force without having it in a bill. Getting the right people in the room on the task force and recognized by legislative leadership. So I wouldn't let the inability to get it in a bill stop. I've got three work groups, task forces that are officially unofficial legislative work groups. And thanks to people like Chair Barker, we get a lot of good legislation through. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Thank you for that comment. And Co-Chair Winters, Co-Chair Stark, Representative Huffman, we'd love your support on that if you want to connect later.
Okay.
I think you have this body because you've got a chair of a very powerful committee over there in the House who can also make certain that there's more work done on this particular issue. And he's nodding his head.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
John, do you want to begin to? No, I need Starks.
Do you want to close the public hearing? Oh,
I opened them both. Right. I did them both.
Sorry. Yeah. Co-Chair Winters, members of the committee, we do have, as mentioned, the -1 amendment that removes the task force on road worker safety.
Co-Chair Winters, I move the -1 amendments to the House Bill 2721. Do I need to say anything else?
No. Co-Chair Stark moved the adoption of the -1 amendment to House Bill 2721. Is there a discussion? Is there an objection? Approved.
For the next motion.
Co-Chair Winters, member of the committee, LFO recommends that House Bill 2721 as amended be moved to the Ways and Means full committee. Co-Chair Winters, I move House Bill 2721 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Co-Chair Stark moves House Bill 2721 as amended to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Approved. I'll take it to full, and then we'll have McLean take it to the House floor, and I'll probably ask Thompson to take it to the Senate floor.
Okay.
Any further business for the good of the order? I think you have to go back up to the floor, or you guys are
adjourned.
Oh my goodness, no, you finished.
Okay.
Okay. Well. Very good.
Well,
with that, if there's no further business, we are adjourned.
Ooh.
We are adjourned.
Ooh.